Unit 7B, Bhakti and Sufi Movements and Rise of Marathas, page number 133. 7B.1, Introduction. 7B.2, Sufism. 7B.3, Ramananda. 7B.4, Kabir. 7B.5, Guru Nanak. 7B.6, Chaitanya. 7B.7, Mirabai. 7B.8, Ramdas. 7B.9, Manuddin Kisti. 7B.10, Summing Up. 7B.11, Books for Reference. 7B.12, Questions for Self-Study. 7B.13, The Marathas. 7B.14, Objective. 7B.15, Introduction. 7B.16, Estimate. 7B.17, Administration. 7B.18, Summing Up. 7B.19, Questions for Self-Study. The Bhakti and the Sufi Movement. 7B.1, Introduction. The Bhakti movement is much older than the Sufi movement. Its philosophical concept is seen in the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita. They emphasize love and devotion as pathways to God. During the post-Bhagavata phase, passionate love and devotion to one personal God became a characteristic feature of the Indian religious thought. The concept of Bhakti was placed on a firmer ground in South India when Shankaracharya revived the Vedanta philosophy. The Alvas gave the cult a metaphysical foundation. Ramanuja is one of the early leaders of Bhakti movements. His disciples carried the movement of North India. Page number 134. The advocates of Bhakti movement in medieval India were mystic saints who had many things in common. They were not affiliated to any particular section. They had no desire to set up a separate religious section of their own. They had no blind faith in any scriptures. They did not follow any rituals or ceremonies. Most of them condemned idolatry. They believed in one God. They realized the unity of God. Although different names such as Rama, Krishna, Shiva, Allah were used for him by different religions, their view was that the bhakti or love or devotion to God was the only means of salvation. Bhakti implied single-minded, uninterrupted and extreme devotion to God without any ultimate motive. Approach to God through personal love and devotion was a foundation of religious life. Bhakti cult made great progress under the influence of the great masters who followed Ramanuja. The main features of Bhakti movement were as follows. 1. God is one. 2. All men are equal irrespective of caste, creed, color and section. 3. Realization of inner self helps in the attainment of salvation. 4. Costly ceremonies and meaningless rituals were condemned. 5. Intensive love and complete surrender to God alone helps man to achieve salvation. Some of the prominent saints of the Bhakti movement were Ramananda, Kabir, Chaitanya, Guru Nanak, Mirabai and Ramdas. 7B.2 Sufism came to India before the establishment of the Sultanate of Delhi. After the foundation of the Turkish rule, a large group of Sufis migrated to India and established themselves in many parts of Hindustan. Sufism is a common term given to Islamic mysticism. The Muslim mystics were known as Sufis. They set an ethical standard by their examples. They were men of great piety, led life of asceticism and developed loving devotion to God. They tried to bridge the gulf between orthodoxy and religion of faith and devotion. The Sufis were generally liberal and broad-minded in outlook. They were organized into orders or silsilas named after the name of the founder such as Kisti, Suharawardi, Naqshbandi, etc. The Kangha was the hermitage of the Sufis where people thronged for spiritual guidance. Thus, Sufism was the parallel movement in Islam. Dr. Irfan Habib says that the mystic saints picked up their ideas from the ideological store of Hinduism and Islam. Page number 135. Main features of Sufism. 1. Sufism derives its inspiration from Islam. Sufism stressed on inner purity and was more spiritualistic in outlook. 2. God is the beloved of the devotee and the devotee is eager to meet his beloved, in brackets, God. 3. Love and devotion help reach Godhood. 4. Sufis attached great importance to Murshid or Pir, in brackets, Guru. 5. Devotion is more important than Roza or Namaz. 6. Sufism stressed on a simple life. 7. Sufism did not believe in the caste system. 8. The Sufism were divided into 12 orders, each under a mystic saint. Thus, the Sufis tried to propagate religious tolerance and their teachings led to the growth of unity between Hindus and Muslims. The most famous Sufi order of India was the Kist Silsila and it received the patronage of Mughals in the 16th century. 7b.3 Ramananda. He flourished in the 14th century in North India. He founded a new school of Vaishnavism based on the doctrine of love and devotion. The special feature of his teaching is that he entirely discarded caste rules enjoyed in the Brahminical system. He wandered about the country visiting holy places and establishing the worship of Rama and Sita. Although a Brahmin, he did not hesitate to eat with the members of the low caste. He took his disciples even from the low caste. Some of them were cobblers, weavers, barbers and peasants. He was the first reformers who employed Hindi as the chief language of North India to interpretate his doctrines. His followers worship Vishnu under the form of Ramachandra with his consort Sita and their chief center is Ayodhya in Uttar Pradesh. Ramananda occupies a unique place in the history of religion in medieval India. Of all his disciples, Kabir is the most famous. 7b.4 Kabir. Kabir was a bold and uncompromising reformer. He stood for changing the society. He tried to bring about harmony between the two communities, Hindus and Muslims, by stressing on their essential unity. Kabir was the most famous disciple of Ramananda. He was a contemporary of Sikandar Lodi. His birth is shrouded in mystery. It is said that he was born to a Brahmin widow who left him near a pond. He was picked up by the wife of a Muslim weaver, Neeru, who brought him up as her own child. Kabir became a disciple of Ramananda and mostly lived at Banaras. He was married and had a son and a daughter. The whole background of Kabir's thought is Hindu. By means of bhakti, he sought to attain salvation. He makes no distinction between Hindu and Muslim, whom he says are parts of the same clay. Kabir condemns idolatry. Kabir's teachings are in the form of small poems, which have been collected in the book called Bijak, which now the sacred book of the Kabir Panthis. Page number 136. 7b.5 Guru Nanak. Guru Nanak was the founder of the Sikh religion. He was born in 1469 AD at Talwandi, a village in the Lahore district. From his boyhood, Nanak showed religious bent of mind. He preached the unity of God, condemned idolatry and urged that the barriers of caste and race must give way before the name of God. Nanak gave his message in the form of small poems which has been collected in the form of a book called Adi Grantha. He advised the Hindus and Muslims to forget their differences and preached universal toleration and personal love for God. He was against image worship. He believed in leading simple, honest and virtuous life. He stressed on purity of mind and conduct. His disciples called themselves Sikhs. 7b.6 Chaitanya. Another remarkable and popular saint was Chaitanya. His original name was Vishwambara. He was born in Nadia in West Bengal. At the age of 24, he became a wandering monk and travelled all over India. He spent most of his life at Puri in Orissa. He was a very emotional devotee of Krishna and used to utter the name of Krishna incessantly. He gave importance to Kirtan. He and his followers paraded the streets of Nadia singing and dancing. Vrindavan was revived as a pilgrimage place because of the efforts of his disciples. Chaitanya emphasized love and bhakti to God. He was not against image worship but disliked priestly rituals and religious practices. He believed that every person was equal before God. He has been regarded as one of the greatest saints of medieval India. 7B.7 Mirabai. Mirabai holds a very high position among the Vaishnava saints. Though she was a princess of the royal dynasty of Jodhpur and the queen of the famous Sisodia dynasty, she renounced the world for the sake of her bhakti to Lord Krishna. She was highly religious from her childhood, and her fame as a sincere devotee of Krishna spread far and wide. She undertook pilgrimage to Dwaraka and died in 1546. Mirabai composed numerous devotional songs. Her chief title to fame rests on her lyrics written partly in Brij Bhasha and partly in Rajasthani. 7B.8 Ramdas. He was one of the bhakti saints of Maharashtra Dharma, the founder of the Dharakari school. He was a devotee of God Rama, born in 1608. He wandered throughout India for 12 years and finally settled down on the bank of river Krishna, where he built a temple. He was a spiritual guide of Shivaji. He was a saint of practical temperament and systematically organized his order. Throughout Maharashtra, he established his monasteries to serve as centers of spiritual and practical activities. His monumental work is Dasabodha. He also wrote Abhangas, which inspire a deep love. Page number 137. 7B.9 Maunin Uddin Kisti. The great figure in the history of Sufism in India was Khwaja Maunuddin Kisti, who arrived at Lahore from Ghazni in 1161 and settled down at Ajmer, where he died in 1235-36. He was the founder of Kisti order of Sufis in India. Also known as Garib Nawaz, he is the most famous Sufi saint of the Kisti order of the Indian subcontinent. He practiced the Sufi Sulah-e-Kul, in brackets peace to all, concept to promote understanding between Muslims and non-Muslims. The Dargah of Kisti, known as Ajmer Sharif, is a symbol of intercommunal harmony. One singular impact of the Bhakti movement was the tremendous impetus it gave to the growth of vernacular literature. The saints of Bhakti movement contributed greatly to bringing about revolutionary changes in Hinduism and Islam. 7B.10 Summing up. The Bhakti and Sufi movement of medieval India developed the feeling of brotherhood among the people. The saints evolved simple religious doctrines which appealed to the masses. They preached equality of all human beings in the language of the people. Thus the work of Bhakti saints issuingly commendable. 7B.11 Books for study. 1. Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan series, Delhi Sultanate, Volume 6. 2. Evolution of Indian Culture, B. N. Lunia. 3. Influence of Islam on Indian Culture, Tara Chand. 7B.12 Questions for Self-Study. 1. Write short notes on A. Kabir, B. Chaitanya, C. Mirabai. Page number 138. 7B.13 The Marathas, Shivaji and His Administration. 7B.14 Objectives. To understand the role played by Shivaji in the establishment of Hindu Patshahi in India. 7B.15 Introduction. The rise of the Marathas in the 17th century is a very significant episode in the history of medieval India. This phenomena is a result of several historical and geographical factors. Though Shivaji is the founder of the Maratha power, it must be admitted that at the time when he appeared on the scene, the ground had already been prepared for him. As Ishwari Prasad has said, the rise of the Marathas was as much the result of his personal daring and heroism as of the peculiar geographical situation of the Deccan country and the unifying religious influences that were animating the people with new hopes and aspirations in the 15th and 16th centuries. Physical features have played an important role in the political history of the Marathas. The mountains hindered foreign invasions and offered protection to the native people. The people who lived in this region were generally courageous, freedom-loving, and were not afraid of difficulties and hardships. They never submitted themselves to foreign rule and carried on the struggle for freedom. Geographical features gave them natural benefits. The hills provided them ready-made and easily defensible rock forts. According to Jadunath Sarkar, nature developed in the Marathas self-reliance, courage, perseverance, a stern simplicity, a rough straightforwardness, a sense of social equality, and consequently pride in the dignity of man as man. Several historical factors also contributed to the growth of Maratha power. South India was the center of ancient Indian culture from the ancient period. From the period of the Satavahanas up to the fall of the Yadavas of Devagiri in the 14th century, Hindu culture found a fertile ground in the Deccan. Foreign influence did not penetrate their religion in a significant way. The South Indian kingdoms preserved and developed the ancient Indian culture. The Vijayanagara Empire, which ruled on similar lines, dedicated itself to the protection of Hindu civilization and culture. The Marathas continued as the successor of Vijayanagara. They came forward to fulfill the vacuum after the fall of Vijayanagara Empire. The Bhakti movement provided a powerful impulse to the rise of Maratha state. It tried to unite the people of Maharashtra and created a respect for Hindu culture. Ramdas, Tukaram were Shivaji's gurus. Similarly, Ekanath, Vamana Pandita and other saints also influenced the political life of Maharashtra. Page number 139. Maharashtra produced a good number of soldiers and leaders. They had acquired administrative and military experiences even before the birth of Shivaji. Many of them worked in Vijayanagara and Bahamani kingdoms. This provided them necessary skill, experience and resources. Equipped with all these advantages, they were on their way to form a new state. The only thing lacking to make them a nation was political power and independence, which was provided by Shivaji in the 17th century. The rise of the Marathas was therefore not a sudden or an isolated phenomenon. It was the natural result of 200 years of preparation under the stress of a religious and social movement which called forth the latent energy of the people and gave them a new life and hope. There is some controversy about the genealogy of Shivaji. His father, Shahaji Bonsale, was an officer under the Sultan of Bijapur. His mother Jijabai belonged to the line of the rulers of Yadavas of Devagiri. Shivaji was born in 1630 in Shivnar. Jijabai, a devout and pious lady, instructed her son in the epics and some of the sacred works of Hinduism. She also narrated the stories of great historical and mythological figures to her son. Dadaji Kondadeva, who was the officer in charge of Shahaji's estate, gave instruction in fighting and administration to Shivaji. He gradually toured the Maharashtra country and gathered around him a large number of Mawalas and started a career of capturing fort after fort. The decay of Ahmednagar and other Shahi kingdoms, the unsettled conditions of the country provided him an excellent scope for an adventurous career. At the age of 19, Shivaji started his career of conquest. When he sized Torana, a hill fort, in 1646. Next, he captured Raighur and strengthened it. Then he conquered Chakan, Kondana and Purandar in 1648. Shivaji's conquests were temporarily stopped when the Sultan of Bijapur imprisoned Shahaji on suspicion of disloyalty. He renewed his conquest in 1656 when he conquered Jauli and Kailan in 1658. The Sultan of Bijapur wanted to stop these conquests and sent his general to check Shivaji. Afzal Khan invited Shivaji for a conference. The two leaders met in 1659. Afzal Khan was killed during the meeting. According to reliable sources, it appears that Afzal Khan had planned to kill Shivaji during the meeting, and when he tried to stop Shivaji, he escaped and killed Khan. The Bijapur army was driven away. The Maratha army now poured into Kolhapur, South Konkan and other places. The attempt of the Sultan to check his raids failed miserably. The Maratha army even surrounded Bijapur. Shivaji had encroached into the Mughal territories. Aurangzeb, who was watching Shivaji's activity, was not prepared to take it lying. He instructed his uncle Saista Khan, the Mughal viceroy of the Deccan, to defeat Shivaji. Saista Khan started in 1660 with a big army and captured Pune, the fort of Chakan and the Kalyan district. Shivaji entered Pune with his small troop in disguise and attacked the Mughal camp. Saista Khan escaped with injuries while his son and many soldiers were killed. This successful attack on the Mughal viceroy increased the prestige of Shivaji, who continued his plunders fearlessly. In 1664, he sacked and plundered the rich port of Surat and carried off an immense booty. Page number 140. The Mughal emperor, who was infuriated with the acts of the Marathas, transferred Saista Khan to Bengal and sent his ablest general Jai Singh with Dilar Khan to fight Shivaji. Jai Singh led Saji to the fort of Purandar. Shivaji agreed to yield and came to Jai Singh. By the Treaty of Purandar, he ceded 23 of his forts and territories, yielding 16 lakhs of rupees annually. Jai Singh persuaded Shivaji to visit the Mughal court. He agreed and went to Agra in 1666. But Aurangzeb did not treat him with the respect and consideration which Jai Singh had promised. Shivaji thought that he had a right to protest in the open court. He was later arrested and placed under restraint. He cleverly escaped with his son from Agra and reached Raigarh. Though the emperor repented his carelessness, he reluctantly recognized Shivaji's title of Raja, but he did not restore the forts to Shivaji. The latter, however, continued his raids. He sacked Surat again and conquered the forts, which he had ceded to the Mughals. Prince Mauzam and the Viceroy of the Deccan could not check the Maratha conquest. The Mughal army suffered defeat at the hands of the Marathas. In 1674, Shivaji crowned himself with a great pomp and ceremony at Raigarh and assumed the title of Chhatrapati. He had established himself as a sovereign ruler. The Maratha armies now marched to the south. They conquered Gingi, Vellore and advanced up to Gudalore. Shivaji conquered many regions of Tanjore and made his brother Ekoji its ruler. The regions he conquered between 1677 and 1678 yielded an annual income of 80 lakhs rupees. He had conquered about 100 forts. Shivaji died in 1680 at the zenith of his fame. 7B.16 Estimate. Shivaji occupies a unique place in the history of India. He was not only the founder of a new state but also a great general, an excellent administrator and the leader of the people. The son of an ordinary Maratha chief, he achieved fame as a nation builder and a protector of Hindu culture. He infused a new spirit among his people, and Shivaji is remembered by his countrymen as a hero who protected and preserved ancient Indian culture. At a time when Hindu way of life was facing grave threat at the hands of the foreigners, he promptly came forward to patronize and protect Hindu Dharma. He was a successor to the great tradition of the South Indian kingdoms, particularly the Vijayanagara Empire. Shivaji is acclaimed as one of the greatest general of the country as ever produced. He organized the mountain people and trained them to face the mighty Mughal force. Page number 141. The significance of his ability can be understood by the fact that he fought valiantly against the powerful armies of Vijapur, Mughals and the Portuguese. He enforced strict discipline in the army. Even his hostile critics admit that he was free from the vices of the contemporary rulers and generals. He had personal magnetism and threw a spell over all knew him. He drew the best elements of the country to his side and won devoted service from his officers, and his dazzling victories and ever-ready smile made him the idol of his soldiers. His enduring contributions is the creation of a powerful state. He united the 96 Maratha clans into one nation and infused a new spirit to them. He was not only a great general but also a good administrator. According to Ilphistome, though the son of a powerful chief, he had begun life as a daring and artful captain, had ripened into a skillful general, an able statesman, and left a character which has never since then equaled or approached by any of his countrymen. In his contribution to the art of administration, he is compared to Napoleon and Sher Shah. Rawlinson considers Shivaji as a great administrator like Napoleon. He was an able general, a successful administrator and statesman. Though an autocrat, he always worked for the welfare of his people. Though an orthodox Hindu, he was not a religious bigot. He was tolerant towards all the religions and respected saints of Hinduism as well as Islam. He created a powerful state, gave it a good system of administration, and tried his best to advance moral and material interest. According to Sri Jadunath Sarkar, he taught the modern Hindus to rise to the fall stature of their growth. Again, he was the last constructive genius produced by the Hindu race. Though he spent much of his time in the wars and campaigns, he did not sight of his life's ambition, the establishment of a Hindu Swaraj in Maharashtra. He was undoubtedly a constructive genius and a king among men, one endowed with a divine instinct or genius. Shivaji also patronized religious institutions, both Hindu and Muslim. He patronized poets like Paramananda, Jayarama Bhushan and other poets. He arranged for the compilation of a dictionary of Sanskrit words. 7b.17 Administration. Shivaji's administrative system is the most enduring of his contribution. His government is called the Ashtapradhan government. He was assisted in his administration by 8 ministers, namely Peshwa, Amatya Mantri, Samanta, Sachiva, Pandita Rao, Senapati and the Nyayadisha. The Peshwa was the prime minister and other ministers held departmental charges of various subjects. Mantri was the personal secretary to the king, while Amatya was in charge of finance. Samanta was the external affair minister. The Sachiva was in charge of correspondence and Pandita Rao looked after religious affairs and endowment. The Nyayadisha was the chief justice and the Senapati in charge of the army. The king appointed the ministers and they held the office at his pleasure. Page number 142. All the ministers except Nyayadisha and Pandita Rao participated in the wars and were employed on military business. The king was the pivot on which the administration rested. The ministers formed an advisory body and carried out the king's instruction and supervised the work of the department. The kingdom was divided for administrative conveyances into province or prants, which were further divided into paraganas and tarafs. The village administration was usually managed by a panchayat and a central government did not interfere in it. Shivaji introduced a few changes in the revenue system. He tried to reduce the power of the hereditary officers called Deshmukh and Deshpande and appointed his own revenue officers. The land was divided into categories Swarajya and Mughalai. He introduced a revenue system that was based on Malik Amber's system. His officer Ammaji Datto conducted an elaborate land survey and fixed the rent at 33% of the gross produce. But later Shivaji collected a consolidated rent of 40%. Besides the regular revenue, he collected contributions like Chauth and Sardesh Mukhi from regions which did not recognize his sovereignty. They amounted to 1/4 and 1/10 of the assessment of the place. Historians justify the collection of these taxes on the grounds of exigencies of the situation. He had to fight with the foreigners like the Portuguese and other rivals and adversaries. In addition to the organization of an army, he had to equip a fleet, build forts and defend the newly acquired territories. Shivaji had one of the best standing armies of his time. It was an organized and disciplined force. The Mawalis and the Hetkaris of his army have become famous. His cavalry was divided into Shilandars and Bargirs. Shivaji selected his men after a personal examination. His army was naturally composed of light infantry and light cavalry, admirably suited to guerrilla warfare and hill campaign. The soldiers were paid regularly. They had to surrender all the plunder to the state. The soldiers were not allowed to keep women in the camps. Strict discipline was enforced in the army. Shivaji paid respect to the Quran and mosque whenever he became across them in his campaign. Forts played an important role in his military system. The forts had three officers of equal state, the Havaldars, the Shahamis and the Sarinobat. He was the first Indian ruler in the medieval age to perceive the necessity of building up a navy. There were about 400 vessels of different sizes in his navy. He fought against the Portuguese, the Siddhis of Janjira and kept the west coast free of pirates. Malwan was the principal fort during his time. There were no regular law courts in his region. The district officers, provincial governors, administered justice on the basis of Hindu system of law. Nyayadisha was in charge of judicial administration and decided the appeals. The king was a source of justice and the final word in appeals. Page number 143. Though Shivaji dedicated whole of his life for the establishment of the Maratha state, it did not survive him. There are many causes for Shivaji's failure to build an enduring state. The military nature of his state is considered an important factor for its decline. His rule was very short and he spent most of the time in the battlefield and could not consolidate his power. The differences of race, caste and clan were very deep and wide among the Marathas, and Shivaji was not able to bring about permanent unity among his people. As Jadunath Sarkar points out, Shivaji's political success shaped the main foundation of that success. In proportion, Shivaji's idol of a Hindu Swaraj was based on orthodoxy. It contained within itself the seeds of its own death. It is also true that Shivaji did not take up any organized attempt to educate the people and to improve their intellect and character. As a result of these defects, the Maratha kingdom, built so laboriously by the genius of Shivaji, began to disintegrate almost within a decade of the death. In spite of some of the basic defects, Shivaji is considered a great hero of the people and a constructive genius. But as a man and a ruler, he is considered as an idol in the history of India. He was free from the vices of his age and strived to serve the poor and the downtrodden. He elevated Maratha nation consisting of 96 clans to an unheard of dignity beneath a benevolent administration. The spirit he created was so potent and permanent that the Maratha bore the brunt of the attack of the Mughal Empire at the zenith of its splendor and surprised the British in the second half of the 18th and the beginning of the 19th century. For the decline of his caste and system, one must seek an explanation in the subsequent history of the Marathas. 7b.18 Summing up. The greatest achievement of Shivaji was the sense of unity which he instilled in the Maratha clans. He brought them under a single Maratha banner. Shivaji occupies a distinguished place in Indian history. 7b.19 Answer to check the progress. 1. Describe the administration system of Shivaji. 2. Write short notices on 1. Shivaji's early life. 2. Shivaji and Mughals.